Morning, Chair. Good morning, Minister, members. I'm Honorable Bekwa from KZN Peak Province in South Africa. I'm representing ANC in this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, colleagues. My name is Patricia Adams and I hail from the Northern Cape. We will follow the sun, not the people.
Thank you. Good morning, Minister and all members. I'm Marco Masehela from the province of Peace, Limpopo, deployed by the ANC and the member of this committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Alan Kago, a tourism ambassador of Eastern Cape Province. A member of this committee is deployed by the African National Congress.
Hi, my name is Derek Alicom. I'm the Minister of Tourism. I'm also a member of the ANC. I represent all parties, and more than all parties, as the Minister of Tourism.
Try to,
I meant.
Good morning, my name is Karake. I'm the Department Director General. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Nurunesa Mula. I'm the Chief of Staff in the Ministry.
Morning, everyone. I'm Shama Natu. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for Minister Derek Kargo.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Deirdre Bonita. I'm the Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the Director General of Tourism.
Good morning. I'm Marie-Pierre Dutoara. I'm the Chief Director of Digital Services for the Department of Tourism.
Good morning. I'm Paul Mokurido. I'm the Director of Digital Services.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Senator Pass as the Registration for the Chairperson of the Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Derek Kronbach, representing the Democratic Alliance on this committee from KwaZulu-Natal. Chairperson, Vance Fox, Honourable Fox, will be here, but he's very ill. He's had to go to the doctor, and he's completely been delayed, but he will be back a little bit later to attend this particular committee. There you go.
Morning. My apologies for being late. My name is James Foss, the expert for Sun Tourism.
Mariana Lampas, I'm a journalist for Media 24 News Digest.
Good morning, everyone. Claire Goss from Independent News Press.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Leslie. I'm sports star.
Morning, everybody. Ismail Hussain from the Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
I'm Sebala Kwanazi from Quiz Report.
Good morning, Kulan Mukban from Business Day.
On that happy note, thank you very much. I'd like to welcome all of us here, everybody that is here. We've got two apologies from Honorable Sadekulu and Honorable Mashobeni. I thank everyone who participated in the declaration yesterday. I think tourism usually does the best when it comes to talking about tourism. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. And from all of us, Minister, we're thankful that we're there right through as a committee.
and as members of Parliament. Today, the Minister is here. We are honored by the Minister being here to present to us two presentations, Renew of South African Tourism and Progress on the Visa Immigration Regime. I think that will assist us in a big way, and will assist the country in a big way, because I'm sure this is the beginning, but it's a process. We hope ultimately we'll get through. Before I hand over to you, Honorable Adams is requested to leave at 10. Thank you, Minister. Oh, I'm sorry. The Deputy Minister is also sent in her apology. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson and Honorable Members. We heard in Honorable Member Porter's absence that he was as well. We were instructing him to get well and get well pod. And congratulations, Chairperson and the committee, on having the report adopted yesterday approved. And I think it's all good well for the committee and that we've worked together. And thanks for the kind comments that were mentioned at the in Parliament yesterday. What we have in front of us, of course, we have two presentations, one on the IMD report or recommendations and the Cabinet decision on the immigration regulations, and right now the review or report on the on SA tourism. On the review panel report, we circulated a presentation, and which you possibly or probably have in front of you. What I'm going to talk to you about, it talks to the presentation, but got a bit beyond, because I thought it would be useful to, I mean, I could obviously have spoken to it, but I thought it would be useful to have it as part of the PowerPoint, to not only have the key recommendations from the panel, but also to give you just a synopsis, a summary of the response from the board to each of these recommendations, and then my own response. Chairperson, the review panel you have in front of you, this is the review panel with one international expert on it and chaired by Ali Musa, who, as you probably all know, was the, some time ago, was the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. So he comes in with a lot of knowledge of the tourism sector. The background, though, is that with the SA Tourism having been in existence for a number of years, it is sort of common practice in government and good practice that all our entities should be reviewed periodically, normally every 5 years. There should be an external review of our entities. There had been no such external review of SA Tourism. So, you know, to itself, it's very important that there should be such an external review that could guide, could identify some of the challenges that the SA Tourism as an entity has needed to confront, and also to assist in putting together the terms of reference of a new incoming board, which was appointed very soon after the completion of this review, and would be able to guide SA Tourism in its work. So the panel was appointed in February 2015 and submitted its report in June this year. Clearly there's been engagement with the panel on how it came to its conclusions, and then there's been considerable discussion with the department and the board itself. And the board then went through these recommendations systematically and responded to each of the recommendations, but ultimately the review panel is appointed by the minister, and the minister has to indicate which of the recommendations are accepted or not accepted, and to help, you know, guide the tourism in its work. And so in the presentation that you've got is a real summary, as I said, of the board's responses to each of the recommendations, and then an indication of which of these recommendations are accepted, and with some elaboration on some of the recommendations. The recommendations are, some of them are being implemented, some pretty hard decisions, or sometimes quite simple decisions, have been taken, but the implementation is at various stages of progress. The scope, as you've got in front of you, the scope of the review covered the following areas: the mandate that they chosen, the strategy and performance of the entity, governance and the organizational structure, and then relationships with stakeholders, and the role of SA Tourism in relation to other entities responsible for tourism and tourism-related functions across the value chain. And that's why I think you need to be well aware of some of the entities that we refer to, and it will come out as we do the presentation. In front of you in the presentation that you handed out, you've got all of the panel findings in summary. But you've also been, some time ago, June, after the panel review report was released, you also did receive the panel review report. But I'll go through the recommendations one at a time. I won't necessarily read the panel findings to you, but in summary, the section that we're dealing with now is the role and mandate of SA Tourism. And essentially, the panel said firstly that the mandate as it currently stands and as defined in the Tourism Act is in fact appropriate for a destination marketing organization. And with international tourism being the main focus area, but domestic tourism marketing and business tourism marketing as very important additional areas. The response from the board was that they are in complete agreement with it, that domestic tourism should be seen as an essential component. And also equally important is the link between business and leisure tourism. You probably know, honourable members, that the research shows that when we have business conferences and international conferences of various types, firstly that this has grown substantially over the last few years. This in itself brings in tourist numbers, but the return visitor rate is very high. So it seems that this is a very important component of SA Tourism. The honourable members themselves have pointed out that domestic tourism hasn't received sufficient focus, but we'll get onto that in a later part of the presentation. But you will also be well aware that domestic tourism isn't the sole responsibility of SA Tourism. We have provincial tourism authorities or agencies. We have city agencies. One honourable member was responsible for one of these city agencies in his life before he came to Parliament. And so we have a host of bodies that are co-responsibility for domestic tourism. But there's one primary body for marketing destinations South Africa internationally. So the review panel felt that the mandate was clear and was appropriate. Clear distinction of roles and responsibilities between SA Tourism and the department. It's a challenge, because right now we can say that there probably is a bit of overlap, bit of duplication of effort, and that will need to be attended to. The board's response was, we need greater clarification. It's just in summary here, greater clarification of the mandates and the working relationships between SA Tourism and the department, and as we go through the presentation, there will be more said about that. The third one is developing and deepening partnerships with the public and private sector, and that's fully agreed to by the board. There needs to be clearer communication and definition of the relationship between other public sector institutions, such as Grand South Africa, for example, and also we'll touch on that bit as we go on to the presentation, but that's completely separate. That there needs to be this partnership between SA Tourism and a strengthened partnership between SA Tourism and the industry, the trade, and of course between the relevant entities at every level of government. And then finally, the SA Tourism mandate needs to be communicated more effectively. The board fully agrees with that. But that in communicating the mandate, of course, all of those areas where there could be blurred lines need to be defined more clearly and communicated more clearly, and we fully accept that recommendation as well. Moving to the section on international marketing, if the honourable members are not following at any point, just interrupt me if you're clear about where I am. On the international marketing side, firstly, the panel found that there's need for an innovative and a fresh international marketing approach. In other words, as an entity like SA Tourism, as we go on through the years, there's always the danger of getting a little stagnant, getting a bit stale. And there's always, when we come to marketing and branding, there's always a need for freshness. There's a constant need to re-examine what you're doing, what messages you're sending out, and how you're sending out those messages. So it's not a one-off recommendation. It's a recommendation that says there needs to be continuous freshness of thinking. The board agreed on that. They said that the innovation, though, needs to be based on good insight, good understanding of the markets that we're targeting. So, as we say, as they said, fresh insights to be generated through new market insights. But I think we need to understand the markets that we're targeting really well and design your marketing approach in accordance with changing market needs and sometimes with tailor-made marketing for particular markets. The next one says the market recommended the review of the marketing execution business model, particularly the use of service providers. The board's response was they agree with that, and that a lead agency approach is being adopted, and in fact has been adopted, to reduce dependency on service providers. It's not saying that there won't be service providers. In fact, there is a lead agency has been appointed, and I think the good news, because it says here a cost-effective model will always be in place, that they came in with a much lower cost than was previously the case. I certainly, and the department certainly, fully accept that, but that there needs to be a balance. You're going to use service providers and agency of this kind, but you do have to have the internal competencies to guide the service provider, to define what you want of them, and to manage the work of the service provider, if you like. The next finding and recommendation was that the panel, and this is specific in relation to the trade shows that we participate in, the panel identified a need for and here in Daba in particular, a need for a strategic partner for the hosting of SA Tourism trade shows. You probably know, honourable members, it's been this information was put before that early in the year that a rapid review of Indaba was done, and the rapid review made certain recommendations. The panel was in complete support of the recommendations made by this separate process called the rapid review, and the board agrees. And so maybe the DG can just give us, just for information purposes, the response from the board was that SA Tourism is sourcing a private sector partner. Obviously mine is acceptance of that recommendation. But we need to make sure that you know, that we are very clear in the criteria in choosing a strategic partner, and the process, you know, we must make sure that it actually happens. The DG might just want to give us some information about where we are in choosing a strategic partner for Indaba.
Okay, thank you, Mr. The process currently, Mr. Shepherdson, is that the board has issued a request for information. Now, normally, a request for information is issued to test whether we do have such service providers within the market. That has been issued. Subsequently, there were some respondents. Based on the number of respondents, they have a subsequent request to National Treasury to say, can it be extended a little bit further so that we are able to get as much as possible. Now, that is not yet a request for proposal, but it helps not to go through a long and very elaborate process when perhaps the players within that market are extremely limited. And the idea is that we are able to determine who are these people that are actually playing there, and based on that, then we would actually be in a position to say for pressure whether we can then proceed with a closed bid or whether we should actually then go for full reverse for proposal. The intention is that, at least by Meetings Africa, we should be piloting some of the aspects of that partnership. Thanks.
So, in essence, the Indaba schedule for 2016, the partner will not, it will still be done as it was before, but by 2017 there will be a partner So it'll be a different model for 27 in Java. I should just say, and just for as a refresher, most of these international tourism-based shows are either run entirely by a private sector. We've just come back from the WTM, which is the largest tourism-based show in the world in London, and it's entirely run by a private company. But there are some other models where there are, you know, where there are partnerships between the government and the private company partner. But the route we're going, for a variety of reasons which we've already discussed with the portfolio committee, is a partnership without losing the branding, the endowed branding, and without relinquishing ownership of it entirely, but bringing in or extracting all of the value that a partnership can bring in the running and operating of a show of this kind. The board, the review panel felt that the SA Tourism should really focus in on its primary mandate. It shouldn't be using too much of its energy to run a tourism trade show. So, you know, there are people that have special skills in running trade shows of this kind. The next one was the panel identified the need for a review of buyer selection and participation at international trade shows. But really, a show like Indaba, the value of Indaba to South African exhibitors or South African participants or participants from other African countries lies in the quality of the buyers that are there and the link that is established between seller and buyer. And what we have at Indaba is government-hosted buyers, and that's normal at a trade show of this nature, whether it's the private sector bringing in buyers or government. But the extent to which interested buyers are there makes a critical difference. In international trade shows, if you're going to make an impact, you need to really be showcasing your country well. There's some more reference later on the presentation on the international marketing side. But there's not much point in being at a WTM or in Berlin for one of these other big tourism trade shows if you're not going to do business in Berlin, if there isn't a good return on investment. So who you take to these trade shows, how you showcase yourself as a country becomes critically important, and you know, making sure that you have a good return on your investment, because there are many other ways of marketing your country. The next recommendation was that SA Tourism, although it has a presence online, it says more needs to be done to bring about integration across different online marketing platforms. And the board's response was, they agree, and that a single platform unification project is due to be completed by the end of 2015. But, you know, I know this gets a bit confusing, and I think the DG just wants to say one or two words on this single platform.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Honourable Member. The current arrangement is that there's about 17 platforms or so. That's got some degree of independence in that they are not necessarily speaking of a central database. What this single platform tries to do is that irrespective of where the person is accessing this information from, whether it's a mobile platform or whether it's a normal website platform and so on, so this will be feeding directly from a central platform which communicates exactly the same message, exactly the same type of communication should be coming from that particular platform. But when it comes to variability, that is of necessity, it would apply also because the message that goes, for instance, to Brazil should actually have nuances for Brazil, but also the language would have to be Portuguese and so on. So those would be the kind of variables that would also then apply. But everything would be feeding off exactly the same database, so whatever being communicated about Africa would actually be a common message across the world.
On the domestic tourism side, the panel finding, as we alluded to earlier, is that it should remain a core mandate of SA Tourism, but as I said, it's mandate exercised in partnership with national, provincial, and local role players. Chairperson the board agrees and has indicated that the domestic tourism strategy is being reviewed. I think there has been a presentation on where we're going with the domestic tourism strategy, but I emphasize where we are going. because you will be aware that there's 100 million rand earmarked for domestic tourism, which goes to 105 and then to 110, all things going well. I think our challenge is to use that money well. I think the Honourable Member Horst passed in the National Assembly yesterday a few ideas, and they are valid ideas, and we certainly think these are ideas to be explored. But we would like to come back to the Portfolio Committee with more detail on not just how that money, that 100 million rand chairperson, would be spent this year, but some plans for, more importantly, plans for how it would be spent next year. We fully agree on the point that has been made about affordability to South Africans, so that our domestic or our local tourism opportunities are made as accessible as possible to ordinary South Africans. But we believe that there are hosts of measures that can be introduced and innovations that can be introduced which will result in increased domestic tourism and can certainly result in greater affordability of some of our tourism sites. The next one here is on a one brand strategy across international domestic markets. The board agrees on that. It's all to do with the branding and the observation that there could well be a fragmentation in the branding as we stand at the moment. So there has to be some common brand. With Semitic branding, you can't market South Africa one way internationally and say these are the things that we offer. You might want to send different messages to different audiences, even internationally, not conflicting messages, but different points of emphasis. And certainly domestically, you might want to do different things in order to encourage greater travel within a country. But they can't be conflicting branding. They can't be conflicting branding. We could say, this is our country. Whatever we brand domestically must be consistent with our international branding. The next one is reviving the welcome campaign. Well, fortunately, on the board, on the panel, were people who have been part of the evolution of tourism policy, if you like, and have come a long way. And so they can reflect back on some of the things that were and some of the things that they believe had a good impact. But what is almost a given, honourable members, is that it's fine for us to say South Africa is a warm and welcoming country and one of our big assets is not just Table Mountain and Mapungubwe, but one of our big assets is the warm and friendly people that we have. We've got to make that real at every level. So, you know, we need to, and that's ongoing work. A nation that understands the value of tourism and is really welcoming to tourists, not only tourists from abroad, but tourists in your village from other parts of South Africa. The next one is on the Tourism Grading Council, Honourable Chairperson. The recommendation of the board, and this is one that we did not accept, was that the Tourism Grading Council should be removed from ethnic tourism and should be located elsewhere, and their preferred option for the elsewhere was the South African Bureau of Standards. We examined that very carefully, and our conclusion was, A, we did not think that the SABS was a good home for the Grading Council, and B, after interaction with the board and the Grading Council itself, our conclusion was that where it is currently positioned is okay. It doesn't have any negative impact on the core function of ethnic tourism. In fact, on the contrary, the role of the Grading Council and the marketing emphasis of ethnic tourism are actually quite complementary. Besides that, Chairperson, the institutional challenges of relocating a body like the Grading Council are not insubstantial, and it would probably deflect us of a lot of our attention on what we need now to be focusing on, and that is, you know, all of the appropriate measures to improve our product, improve our destination, and market our destination more effectively. The Grading Council, there are other points here made with respect to the Grading Council. But clearly, firstly, the board supports that. They believe as a board of SHS believes that it is not in any way negatively impacting on the core mandate of SHSM. And so, and secondly, on the recommendation that there needs to be a new business model, they believe that we need to have a more focused policy position on where to with the grading system in South Africa. As honourable members will know, the grading council is defined in the Tourism Act, but there's always a question about how far should it go, how is it affected by new developments like TripAdvisor and other forms of information that people have, how do we protect the integrity of the grading system, and how do we ensure that the grading system has real value for people who pay to be graded. So the model has to be looked at, and I can just say that it is currently being looked at, and as the board reported, they are in the process of piloting the integration of the online reviews into the grading criteria that they use. So that's where we are with the grading council. On the next item here is the South African National Commission Bureau. And what the panel is recommending is that the business case for the Convention Bureau needs to be strengthened, and there needs to be a strong motivation, firstly recognizing its value, and motivating the support of the state or various organs of the state in recognition of the value that conventions and conferences bring to our country, but that we should be exploring self-funding mechanisms. But that's not for today, not for immediately, but down the line. The board's response was they will be working closely with the management of the National Convention Bureau to strengthen the case, if you like, and they refer to international best practice, where there is invariably some funding for the fiscus, because the fiscus sees the value that it brings. So we accept that recommendation, and that further exploration should happen with respect to at least an element of self-funding, or at least elements of contribution from the private sector in this area of conventions and conferencing, etc. The rest of the recommendations pertaining to the Convention Bureau are fully accepted and repeated by the board. Clearly, the last one that you see there, that SHSM must maximize the linkages between business and leisure tourism. I mean, there's complete agreement on that. Research shows that the link is very powerful. And so it says here that we need to focus more on converting these business events into leisure tourism. That could happen. It could be leisure tourism that coincides with the business events, and leisure tourism that follows from such business events. In other words, you know, take maximum advantage of these business events to showcase our country and to result in a high return visitor rate or a high rate of positive publicity following from the fact that you, a business event or a conference, has brought people to your country. The next one is the institutional positioning and partnerships. It says here, SHSM must be underpinned by a partnership between government and industry, and SHSM needs to work in a way that is fundamentally collaborative. The board's response was that SHSM is preparing a detailed and comprehensive stakeholder engagement plan. And that is good, because I think we all would agree that the SHSM needs to have a much healthier and dynamic relationship with the industry. And so what you say here, an accessible, flexible and engaging institution is necessary to support tourism with all of its collaborative destination marketing and development. So SHSM, you know, by its nature, SHSM as the key marketing agency, but we have a host of institutions and the private industry itself doing that kind of marketing. We need to find those synergies and a strong collaborative approach in how we best market our country. it goes without saying that engagement with industry associations and members across the functional areas are important. Let me just say, without going into details on the institutional positioning and partnership, both the board and the department and I fully accept these recommendations, and we believe this is critically important, because you cannot have effective tourism working without a healthy and dynamic relationship with the industry. And of course, that stronger collaborative relationship between it as a national entity and the variety of entities that exist provincially and even at local government level. The on the strategy, analytics and market intelligence, it says here, the panel findings say that research is to be repositioned at the heart of strategic planning, including through reviewing and updating the tourism growth strategy. So the main point is that whatever we do, and that's when I think about responding to particular market needs, tailor designing your marketing strategy in accordance with shifting technologies, with changing technologies, with changing trends, all of it is informed by research and a better understanding of what the market needs are and what works and what doesn't work in your marketing. Maybe the DG could just say a little bit about, because it speaks about the recommendations, use complicated terms like triangulating the steps picture on tourism arrivals. Maybe the DG can just elaborate on that a bit.
Thank you, Minister. The issue is that what the panel is suggesting is that we should try and move away from just purely using data that comes through in terms of our interest as kind of country from where and so on, and start actually getting into other data sets or even undertake other studies that could complement that data. An example, attractions, whether it's a international park, whether it's Robben Island, where all these attractions actually have their own databases where they store information about people that are actually visiting, how many people came, where they're coming from, what did they like about this, and so on and so forth. That information would actually assist us in understanding the needs of the market. But there's also an issue, part of the issue being that if we've got this information that we have about the different markets, what do the Germans like, what do the Chinese want in South Africa, so we should be in a position to also disseminate that information so that on the other side, the industry is able to get some of these insights, because to do it individually, it becomes quite costly. So they can then focus on the actual sales, but more information about what it is that can be offered to that particular grouping and how they respond to the market, how they do it, and so can then be profitable. Thank you.
The next section deals with organizational structure and human resource development. A lot of time and effort was spent by the review panel, because that's its nature. It's an organizational review or an institutional review to identify what some of the institutional challenges are within an institution like Edithurism. Let me just say, in a typical institutional review, less emphasis would be going on the broad policy framework, and more emphasis would be examining the institution to indicate whether the institution is fulfilling its mandate properly and whether it is designed appropriately to fulfill its mandate. That would be a typical institutional review. Because no such review has been done on Edithurism, and because of the complex relationships that exist, it's best, perhaps it's a bit different from what would be typical institutional reviews. But in doing the review of the organization itself, it came to various findings, and it did identify that there were challenges within the institution itself in terms of its culture of engagement and empowerment, as the words which the review panel used. And so we're not necessarily getting the best performance of the institution, and so more attention needs to be given to the top management, the functionality of top management, the kind of skills that are in the institution, and the organizational culture within the institution. because clearly some challenges came out in their interviews. It also is because this institution, differently from, let's say, a lot of our other South African entities, does have country offices across the world, so that model has to be looked at as well. So firstly, it says, look, you know, just re-examine your top management to see whether the top management is sufficiently skilled, and the term that they use is fit for purpose. Clearly, honourable members will know that there have been sort of recent appointments to top management, and the conclusion of the board is that they're satisfied that top management is hardly well suited to perform the functions. But we accept the recommendation, including that requires effort to ensure that that it's a well managed institution and that the best performance is achieved in the way the institution is designed and in the way management takes place at a variety of levels. So the kind of workplace culture is obviously very important. The organizational design, as I said, includes the country offices. There is a process underway to look at what the rubric panel suggested, is that the country office or hub office model needs to be re-examined, because the country offices, honourable members, are expensive. They're not inexpensive operations. So we have to make sure that where we have country offices, that we get value for money out of our country offices, that they are properly resourced and that they're able to do their work properly. The expansion to new countries, if that occurs, shouldn't be done because we think it's the right thing to do. It should be done because we think a country office can make a significant difference. So it's not about where, you know, how many tourists come from a particular country, but because we think that a country office in a particular country is going to add value. I'll give you an example. We have the second largest flow of tourists in South Africa, by broad definition of tourists, comes from Zimbabwe. They need little encouragement to come to South Africa. It's not going to add any particular value having a country office in Zimbabwe, and we don't have a country office in Zimbabwe. But the same thinking should go into every country. Is that country office going to add real value, and is the work that they do going to result in a greater tourism flow to South Africa? So that work is being done. The recommendation also is that a skills audit needs to be done within the organization to understand what skills are necessary, what skills currently exist, what deficiencies there are, and to put plans in place to address those deficiencies. The next recommendation is on budget and finance. It says basically a strengthened business case for investment in marketing. We heard honourable members yesterday. Honourable members were more or less in one mind that there's good value in marketing South Africa, and the return on investment is very good, but it's not just about how much money is allocated in the budget, but how we get the best return on the money that is allocated in the budget. But we do need to speak quite powerfully and present the business case very powerfully. To say, well, it's not just because we think it's a good way, it's a good value for money investing in marketing South Africa, marketing domestic tourism in South Africa, but we need to indicate very clearly why we believe this good value. It refers to the Thompson levy, and it makes the recommendation. Let me say, because the panel refers to so many different points, a number of the recommendations say further review needs to be done, further work needs to be done, because it couldn't possibly go into all of these areas in the kind of depth I would like to. But the discussions with industry so far is that the Thompson levy, firstly, we believe it's made a very important contribution, but we want the levy payers to be motivated in paying that levy. In order for them to be motivated, that's what the panel says, and we agree with them, we need to demonstrate the value for money for those voluntary contributors of the Thompson levy. A review of the budget, well, I mean, I suppose that's fairly self-evident. That has to happen in any event all the time. Going on to the next page, Chairperson, that's on the governance model. It says the composition of the board should reflect the partnership between public and private sector that underpins its work. This panel recommendation was made before the appointment of the new board. We believe the new board is much more representative and has different interests on the board. I might share with the honourable members that I myself would adopt and did adopt a cautious approach in including people because, you know, the understanding could be, well, include the private sector there. The caution is, don't have people there, or be cautious about putting people there that would have possible narrow interests, or would be trying to promote their own interests on the board. In other words, if you're a hotel group, you might be inclined to promote your own hotel group on the board. So a little bit of caution there, but the current board, as the board itself responded, does have a combination of public and private sector experience, and may co-opt experience expertise from time to time, and I think that speaks to the, you know, further part of the recommendation here, that ad hoc advisory committees could be set up, and that is true. Because the advisory committees or the subcommittees of the board require particular expertise, possibly beyond what exists in a small number of board members that we currently have. So they may bring in and invite other people onto the subcommittees, whether it's the marketing subcommittee or research subcommittee. So the board should identify the kinds of subcommittees that they want and be at liberty to co-opt members to serve on those subcommittees. Next page, chairperson, also on governance. It starts off by saying, well, there should be staff satisfaction and stakeholder satisfaction measures. We agree with that. The board's response is that the remuneration committee will be reviewing the contracts of the executive management, if you like. But if we have to be really honest with ourselves, is that the level of staff motivation is not what it should be in Citroën, and that's a management responsibility, and the management must ensure that it does everything that it can to get the best out of its staff in the organization. And then the performance contracts, very importantly, of senior management must be aligned to the organizational performance plan. It says again, the marketing effective measures should be developed to introduce to achieve an understanding of the impact of various marketing activities. Well, that could also be performance management. You've got to know what is it you set out to achieve. You've got to be able to distinguish, and you will be overseeing the work of SH Rosen, but you in your own minds will know whether it is doing its job properly and whether declining numbers are as a result of things that are beyond the control of the SH Rosen. And I don't need to elaborate on that. SH Rosen can't be held responsible for declining numbers as a result of Ebola or declining numbers as a result of visa difficulty. But we need to be satisfied that SH Tourism does have a benchmark, does have targets, and is fulfilling its mandate optimally and efficiently. The next slide is about it then touches on a national department, which typically is not done in an institutional review, but because they are, the panel itself identified, you know, possible duplication of efforts and clearly the need for healthy synergy between the national department and SH Tourism, which makes some recommendations in this regard, because it should go right back to the beginning, and that it's clearly communicated mandates and roles and responsibilities. So it identifies the National Department of Tourism as the primary role being to unblock obstacles to tourism growth and to position tourism as a key economic sector. It also says that it should look at cutting back its the focus areas that should not necessarily be the key focus areas of the department. And it talks about the structured and healthy relationship or accountability in relation to ethicism and the private sector and so forth, and the collaborative approach. The board's response is that completely agrees that the respective roles and responsibilities need to be clarified and incorporated into a governance framework. Our view here, Chairperson, is that the when we accept the recommendations, it needs to be further unpacked, that the department's primary role is to champion tourism and unblock obstacles. We accept that, and that is true, and that does mean that we need to have a re-examination of what we are doing as a, or what the department is doing with respect to marketing itself, and in particular the role of the program that deals with international matters. And that we should really focus our work as a department on a number of areas like skills development, domestic tourism development, responsible tourism initiatives, EPWP programs, etc., destination enhancement, including looking at municipalities, not exclusively on the board. The matters concerning municipal resources clearly become co-responsibility of provincial governments, local governments, but it needs attention, there's no question about that. But all those do a number of other initiatives that will result in destination enhancement, job creation, and protecting our precious resource. There needs to be a strengthened relationship between SA Tourism and the Department of Tourism. The DG is well aware of it. The DG is working on it as we speak, and there is a much, we believe, a much healthier relationship today than there was at the time of this review panel doing its work. The next slide, Chairperson, well, there is no next slide. in conclusion, I mean, the recommendations are quite comprehensive. The recommendations are intended for us to do, for SA Tourism, to do its work more effectively, but also to have clear definition of what it is meant to do. But it's important for us that while we commissioned this work and appointed the panel, that SA Tourism has done a lot over the years to market South Africa successfully. And I think whatever shortcomings are identified in the report of this nature should never be construed as saying, well, SA Tourism hasn't done a good job. We believe over the years SA Tourism has done a very good job, but we also believe that it can do even better. The panel recommendations help us and pave the way for SA Tourism to work more collaboratively, to strengthen its relationships and partnerships, to have a greater impact on marketing SA Tourism, marketing South Africa as a destination. We believe we've got everything going for us at the moment. We know it's a rapidly changing environment, and we need to stay ahead of the game. And we need to use all of the tools at our disposal, whether they're digital tools, whether they're physical presence, whether they're trade shows. We need to use all of the tools at our disposal to get a greater share of the market. We've lost a lot, as honorable members will be aware. Over the last 6 months, we've seen a declining numbers. We need to recapture the ground. We need to consolidate our position, and we need to grow again as a destination. So the board has huge responsibilities to achieve greater impact, but it can only achieve a greater impact if the organization itself is working optimally and if the partnerships and collaborations are effectively achieved. And certainly the department will play its part in helping achieve that and ensuring that it's not just about editorism, it's about the department itself working very closely with the industry in order to achieve our common objectives. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Minister, on the presentation. Members, opening for questions before the Minister calls on the vaccine. Time for questions for the Minister.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Firstly, I would like to welcome the Minister's very extensive unpacking of the SA Tourism Review report. I'm very happy that the Minister, in fact, himself came to the committee to come and explain exactly the rationale behind the SAT review and what we can expect from it. So I would like to congratulate the Minister on this particular move, because it is important that reviews do take place of entities, and specifically given the importance of SAT in destination marketing, that this review was long overdue to make sure that we do align their mandate with what is our strategic objectives. So, you know, obviously one must ask then a couple of important questions: what it is that we are taking from this review in terms of ensuring proper implementation so that we get to those very important objectives. So reviews obviously play an important role to do what we refer to as an external perspective, because if you're going to do it in-house, you're going to come to the same conclusion. So it's very important that it was a panel constituted of people from various backgrounds and areas of expertise. Obviously, it must also be a professional conversation, because it's for the good of the country. And obviously, reviews offers a chance for you to do some internal realignment, because the Minister described the various changes in the market, and therefore it becomes important for us to not hang on to old marketing strategies and to try and get to do some things that's not going to be in line with what international trends are, because it's obviously the bigger picture that we need to take into consideration. Now, what is also important for a review is to take stock of the current tourism products that are on offer. So what is it that we must market, to whom must we market it, and how must we market it? So I think part of the review, something that must come from this review now, is a taking stock exercise, so that we do take stock of exactly what it is that South Africa has to offer, to who and how, because there are various markets: leisure tourism, health tourism, business tourism, adventure tourism, etc. And I've made the point previously that I think it's important that SAT develops a strategy for each of those markets, but that you bring them all together at the end so that you have a return visitor, because that's ultimately what we need to do, given our strategic location on the African continent, but also because we are on a destination, we have to work much harder than many other destinations. So the role ultimately then of SAT is to do more destination marketing. My view, and then the role of the National Department of Tourism, and ultimately the ministry, the political head of the National Department of Tourism, is to focus more on product development. Because I think that is something that lacks. One mustn't dismiss the good work that's been done in many parts of our province, but then on the other hand, there are very serious shortcomings and lack of proper product development, that if you can reach that limited geographic spread. Because let's face it, there are so many good things happening in our cities, and it's not perhaps, because it's very often private sector driven. And I think there the NDT really needs to come to the party and assist with more product development, so that SAT can do the destination marketing side of things. So there is the balance for me in that particular scenario. The Minister's on record for saying at a media briefing at the Indaba held earlier this year, that there will be an international partner that will come on board. If the Minister can just elaborate more on that, because I'm very keen to find out more exactly what is the purpose of bringing on board an international partner. Whilst I agree with it, but I would just like to find out from the Minister what is the thinking behind that, and how that will fit in with what his explanations were earlier on with regards to the Indaba. So, Madam Chair, and then the other thing, of course, is the one granting scenario that the Minister alluded to. Very important, because we are one country with one brand, and then obviously there comes the taking stock exercise. I think that's a very worthwhile exercise to do. We have done it in Cape Town, we've done it in Western Cape, and it's important to do it from time to time because of changing trends. So perhaps as a country, and then the NDT, together with the SAT, could champion such an exercise, because then you activate your provinces to ask your provinces what is important for your province to be marketed accordingly, what it is that you are offering to the tourism industry, and then obviously it can go down to your cities and to your regions, so that everybody has one brand, so there's linkages between what your marketing agencies are doing, because I have figured this out previously, that some marketing agencies are marketing specific products whilst the entity and SAT is marketing a different product, but it's all in the same region. So I think there's definitely synergy that could be created through such an exercise, because that would be for me a natural outcome of such a review, to have such a very thorough exercise taking place. And then obviously the important questions, what will SAT do? And it might be more appropriate to ask it once the minister has spoken about the visa recommendations or the IMC outcomes. But this department now needs to obviously do a lot of hard work to repair our international brand. And what plans will the department together with the SAT put in place to restore and to repair our international brand? Because it takes years and decades and millions of rands from government and from the private sector to establish your brand as a destination of choice when it comes to travel and trade. And I always speak about travel and trade being together, because you can't separate it. And what plans will be put in place how to deal with this very important exercise to reposition ourselves? Because people plan ahead. Many marketing agencies have diverted many of their marketing already. So obviously there needs to be a very strong campaign put in place to deal with that, running parallel with everything else that's been said here today and what the plans are. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation by the Minister. Chairperson, what I want to put up front is the fact that I appreciate the fact that the Minister has been able to tap into that memory that lies there with his former predecessor that is, who has been appointed to the panel. And I also want to put it up that the findings of the panel are not different from the findings of the and the discussions among the committee members here. If there are similarities and whatever, that will make it easy for us to adopt and agree on the recommendations of the panel. I was also I also welcome the presentation that the minister has restructured the establishment of the board. I was worried for some time with the issue that the board was serving in the board members were serving their own voluntary basis, because there's a huge amount that the department is transferring to SAT. So if you have those people that way, they are serving as board members on a voluntary basis, it limited the scope of having people with other expertise, which I think the case is now. What I think is the remuneration now of the board member, which I think it is in place as it was presented in the previous meeting where we have the department. The other thing that I wanted to talk about is the issue of market branding, because cities were marketing differently. Now that there is a recommendation from the panel, I think that will result in us having same and marketing in a broader perspective, communicating the same message. I think it is also, I also, what did I say? Okay, let me just hang it on there, Chairperson. The other things have been said, they all have been said. Thank you very much.
Now, thanks, Chair. Thanks, Minister, for the presentation. I've just got one question from the Minister. Since there's the finding from the party panel, the question is, what is the position of the Minister regarding the Tourism Guidance Council being a separate entity from the South African Tourism? Since SA has already appointed a chief assurance officer, which seems contrary to the recommendations of the regional report. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation by the Minister. I want to welcome the issue of the domestic tourism, which to me is very, very important. And that indeed, if we can have a strategy that will show how we are going to deal with the money reinvested for the domestic tourism, this sector might go very far. Another issue which I don't know how we are going to be addressing it is the issue that says in most of the establishments that we are having, the people who are working there are not really people who are here in South Africa legally. There is that notion. And we are the ones who are looked into as people who can create as many jobs as possible. But at times, because of this, it might not really address the problem that we are having in South Africa, if indeed this is happening. And if it does, how are we going to cap it, or how are we going to address it? Thank you.
Thank you. On the Tourism Grading Council, we seem to be entering a period of flux where it's not entirely clear, either from the department side or indeed from the industry side, where this should go. So again, there's a panel finding that SA Tourism is put here not well aligned to the organization, and they're proposing some other entities like NT or Surfing Bureau Standards to do those gradings. The minister is not accepting a particular response. Then the board said, well, we must, you know, promote some more coaching. When the Tourism Grading Council came before the committee, one of the things that was accepted is that the way that it was set up wasn't necessarily in the best interest of either industry or the country, in that you had a choice in whether you were to be graded, and then you paid if you exercised the option to be graded, which really ended up in a situation where we've got the worst of all worlds, because the intent of grading was to have some kind of quality assurance for the international visitor in particular, bearing in mind that we live in an electronic age with instant communication, and through TripAdvisor and other types of social media, if somebody has a bad experience, particularly if they experience far less star than I advertise, it will become very well known very quickly. And the idea was that the Tourism Grading Council intent certainly was to make sure that if a hotel was, or an establishment was graded 4 stars, it really did deliver a 4-star service. But with it being voluntary and with a payment being a disincentive, not every establishment chose to be graded, and as such the risk, the systemic risk, remains that tourists might come, go to an ungraded establishment, have a bad experience, and then damage the brand overseas. A far, far, far very expensive was possible in the past because of social media. And we've put to the Tourism Grading Council that the grading should be compulsory rather than voluntary, but it should be free. And the cost, which is actually quite minimal compared to the overall tourism budget, should be picked up by the department rather than where it's currently being funded from. Now, I'm not too sure to what extent that debate was. When you heard from Mr. Wood, he said we are moving, I remember his words very clearly, we're moving in that direction towards a compulsory yet a free levy. And now there's an independent survey where that, or part of that discussion, I suspect, comes forward in the first column, first block, and the alignment, and who should do this and where it should be located. I'd really appreciate if the minister could perhaps give us a little bit more insight as to where we're going with this and why the TGSA, GCSA, should still remain with the tourism, and some thinking as to why it should be some of those other entities along the new arrangements that GCSA themselves say they're going to do.
I forgot one question, please. I agree there with the minister when he's saying domestic tourism is not the sole responsibility of
big team. But my, can you talk more on who is the center of coordination of those various activities? Because I think there must be a center of coordination so that it is not difficult for ADT to do the marketing. Thank you.
Thank you for those. I just would like to find out if there is closer collaboration with departments such as sports, health, business, economy, so that FET as well as tourism department is able to promote sports, tourism, health, tourism, and da 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 da, including the presidential infrastructure committee to find out where tourism could play a role, or if there's anything for tourism, including sea tourism, marine tourism, sea tourism, whatever you want to call it. In future, we'll have a discussion with National Treasury on the possibility of establishing a convention fund for the National Convention Bureau, so that it is able to do, to actually even assist provinces. And to you, Minister, specifically, will you consider a legislative review for the rating scheme? And NDT, I think it's important to get just a survey of what the provinces have, so as to assist SAT to be able to brand, or in the South African branding, but you mentioned all what the provinces are having, so as to spread geographically the attractions that are there in the country as a whole, and not in specific areas. To add what Honorable Chagos said, she spoke about inverted commas, jobs for foreigners, particularly the hospitality industry. I wonder if those jobs form part of the jobs that have been created by tourism, if we could be assisted in that. And also there are jobs that are reported from various areas in the provinces, in specific sections, are those jobs catered when we talk about the number of jobs that have been created in the country? Thank you. Over to you, Minister Andy.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm just going through some of the comments and questions systematically. There's a bit of an overlap in some of the questions and comments. The taking stock of our products, clearly that needs to be in taking stock of what we have and what we have to offer, and the tourism potentials of what we have to offer. Honourable Member Ford spoke about leisure, health, business, etc. I don't think it is sufficiently, it is part of our marketing strategy, part of the marketing approach of SA Tourism. So it showcases, let's say, adventure tourism. I know the CEO has often spoken about golf tourism, and we're talking about so-called niche areas. I think we need to do more study and more research, and speaking to my DD while we're talking, on what of these niche areas are niche areas that we can really use to our advantage. I know there have been reservations expressed by various people in health tourism, but I've seen what, and it's a word that sometimes, can be offensive, because you're not trying to, commercialize or extract value out of people's health needs. But at the same time, you know that you're offering really good services, many countries actually include that in their portfolio of offers as a country. So when we know that people from other countries come to South Africa sometimes for critical health treatments because it's good, and it's more it's cheaper than in their own countries, especially developed world countries, whether dental treatment or cosmetic surgery. And if you have something good, you shouldn't be shy of saying we've got something good. But to do it in a sensitive manner. But I think the main point was to look at the whole spectrum of niche areas and say, how can we incorporate that in our total marketing? In some countries, a particular area is going to be of more importance than another area. It's not going to be, and they're studying each of these areas, studying the market, studying who comes to have medical treatment. As one example, in South Africa, who comes to play golf in South Africa? Are we likely to get a large number of Indians to come and play golf in South Africa? It might not be part of your tailor customized marketing strategy for India, but it might be critically important for the USA or for Japan. So I think there's a constant study of what are the niche areas that can resonate and attract people from particular countries. I think that's very important. And then to be unshy about marketing them. So I really agree with that, because you're quite right, we are a long-haul destination. We've got to give people good reasons for coming to South Africa. We believe that, you know, messaging is has to be a forever changing messaging. But it's only one single thing. Because there are, you know, and the good news about South Africa is that it isn't one single thing. It's that we have so many things in one country that we can market and that we can offer. So this notion of a world in one country is actually quite a powerful one, especially in a long-haul flight. To say we don't just come here, it might well be cheaper to fly to Kenya to do your wildlife experience. So why not just go to the cheaper place and the closer place? Well, you come to South Africa for a safari because you get more than a safari. And while you're here, by the way, not every family member wants to do the safari. Somebody might want to play golf while others are doing the safari. So put it as a package. These are the many things you can do in South Africa. Fully agree with that. The online Java question, I think two members referred to that, the whys. Firstly, the feedback we get from the industry is that our own tourism travel show or tourism trade show is critically important. We should be bringing buyers here, and that's very important to our industry. But then it needs to, you know, you need to really, you know, run it well and to get the best of buyers here and make it attractive to exhibitors to be there as well. And the only reason why exhibitors would want to be there is if they know being there will bring them business, potentially. The reason for an international partner, as identified by the rapid reviews was done, and then coming in a slightly different angle by the review panel. The review panel's feeling was that too much of the attention of SA Tourism is spent on operational matters regarding Indaba. So Indaba is very important, but there are people with expertise in running shows like Indaba. But why an international partner and why not a local partner? Well, we're not stuck on an exclusive international partner. We'd be very, very happy to have partnerships in a partner, in the chosen partner. But the importance of the international partner is for a couple of reasons. They bring in expertise, and there are a host of possible partners. I will not get at all involved, so let's make it very clear. It's gone out of tender. But I can just talk a little bit about the rationale behind it. The international partner will bring in networks. They could bring in capital, they can bring in expertise. So once you have an international partner, they have an interest in the success of the trade show. So they have an interest in bringing the buyers here. And they do have the network internationally. So, you know, there are a host of reasons why, and you can just take a relook at the motivations provided by the review panel, and then what exactly the external review says. But I think both arguments are sound. The argument that SA Tourism, while Indaba is very important to its marketing endeavors, it shouldn't be too operationally absorbed by Indaba. A. B. There's all sorts of value in bringing in an international partner with all of their networks and expertise. And that's essentially the reasoning on that. So one brand, you know, I think, you know, a challenge that confronts us, but you might want to elaborate on it a little bit. We are in danger. We have Brand South Africa doing branding of South Africa. We have SHSM doing a different kind of branding. We must speak with one voice. We must constantly look at, and I'm going to be a bit more upfront and more specific. We've got to look at, is our message resonating? Does the slogan meet South Africa? Does that pull people to South Africa? What does India use? Incredible India. What does Thailand use? Amazing Thailand. And so we've got to look at, does it speak to people? Does it pull people? And so branding is very important. But what you've got to get is the distinction and the SHSM will tell you. On the one hand, there's the branding. On the other hand, there are campaigns. And so you might have campaigns to stimulate domestic tourism. When we say during Tourism Month, while the international theme is a billion tourists, a billion opportunities, we say a million experiences are just a short left away, something like that. So we can have our local campaigns to stimulate, and those campaigns must be backed up by other measures. I'll get back to domestic tourism in a moment. But you do have campaigns, and the campaigns speak to people, you pull people. That's what tourism is about. You're competing in environment. People must want to say, I want to go there. Domestically, people must say, I do want to go to Pilgrim's Rest, and I do want to see Ohrabi Falls, two different parts of the country. And internationally, primarily, we want people to want to come to South Africa. I say that, I stress that primarily. We want people to come to South Africa. Yes, to be chairperson, we want them to spend more time in South Africa. We want them to see more of South Africa and not only come to one or two places in South Africa. Primarily, we want to say, South Africa, I've got to get there. So yes, we want the geographic spread, but we have to use, our wonderful members, we have to use our magnets. And I know there's always going to be dispute about that. I know that we've got... I use Pilgrim's Rest, but we've got this incredible Lady River Canyon in Mpumalanga. We've got fantastic offerings all over the country. But I've just been participating in a panel discussion on branding, country branding versus destination branding. Some countries say we brand our country, come to our country. All the countries that have key magnets will always use that key magnet that people can identify with. So Rio de Janeiro or Brazil, you will always see Sugarloaf Mountain there with the Christ the Redeemer statue. You always see it. You'll never see any marking of Paris without the Eiffel Tower. You'll not see marking of Jordan, and Jordan was there, and they say, we will use Petra, because it's so well known we can't afford not to use the brand. So we must be unashamed about using Table Mountain as a brand, even if we use it for 1,000 years, because people know Table Mountain, they want to see Table Mountain. There is much else besides, and that should be part of our marketing. But don't be shy of saying, we offer a wildlife experience. Germany does not offer a wildlife experience. Japan doesn't, and India doesn't. They offer other things. But we must offer what we do, and we must make it tempting. So tempting, when we talk about our beautiful coastline, it must be tempting, it must be enticing, and our culture and heritage. We have a different culture and heritage that we should be showcasing creatively. But the Honourable Member Horst, I mean this issue of branding and coherence in branding, I think will be a challenge that I think we have to apply our minds to more carefully. The other question was on the remuneration of board members and the voluntary nature. I think that is important, Honourable Member, for a couple of items, and thanks for your support in our doing that. The problem with having voluntary members of a board, it can become, you know, it sort of clutters off other people who could be useful board members who don't have the resources to go to board meetings. So you don't want to be an elitist board of people who don't need remuneration. So I think that was an important decision there. But back onto the branding, because you asked the question, domestic tourism, who is at the center of it? Let's just say up front. Any tourism must be at the center of it, because that's the position it occupies. There are provincial marketing agencies, city marketing agencies, small town marketing authorities, information offices, etc. Can I give you an example, which we need to reflect on all of the time? Durban. You know, the city of Durban. The city of Durban is becoming increasingly known internationally and is doing a lot of things to attract people, including getting direct flights to Durban. Honorable Chairperson, does anyone know of a place called Etiquette internationally? No, they don't. But Durban gets it, and KZN gets it. So there might be an Etiquette municipality. There might be a Tshwane municipality. People don't know where on the Spanish Tshwane is. To come closer to home, it's Bitu. You know where Bitu is? Bitu municipality? You know where it is? Oh, you happen to know. Many South Africans do not know where it is. Sorry? Okay, I think it's somewhere close to a place called Knysna. Do you know where Knysna is? Oh, Plettenberg Bay. Close to Plettenberg Bay. Do you know where Plettenberg Bay is? Does anyone not know Plettenberg Bay? There's no use marketing Bitu. Nobody will honestly know what you're marketing. So there's the engagement in marketing South Africa and its various products. There needs to be engagement so that we actually have a common understanding of what works and what doesn't work. The details, as I said, on the numbers of that domestic tourism market, it's not just about the strategy. It's about the details within the strategy. So you might have a good strategic framework, and what we would like to do is come back to your Honourable Chairperson with more details of what we intend to do next year and how we intend spending this ring-fenced amount of money, because the details matter. We will come back, indeed, within the next few weeks with some more detail on how we intend spending that money. It's not a small amount of money, nor is it huge, but if we say who's at the centre of it, the total amount of money available for tourism marketing is much greater than the money that is allocated to SA tourism. It's much greater than the 100 million rand ring fence for domestic tourism. The total amount of money, if you look at provincial budgets, provincial agencies, and cities and towns. The challenge is to get some kind of coherence. The Tourism Grading Council of South Africa, and the question about the appointment of the Chief Assurance Officer, and what informed the decision to retain the Grading Council at SA Tourism. Let me start off with why you're saying that at SA Tourism. And there are a host of associated questions, but it's not about it being part of SA Tourism, it's about shared services, really. So it does have an independence, but it wouldn't make sense. Well, I mean, these are the options to be examined. Remain at SA Tourism, stand alone, or located elsewhere. And located elsewhere could be in the department or SA Bureau of Standards or anywhere else. Those are the three choices. In the district, remain there, on its own, or located elsewhere. But if it were to stand on its own, it would have to spend a lot more money on what would essentially now be shared services, on human resources, on legal services, on financial services, etc. So it really is just that. Where it currently is an institutional home. Moving it to another institution, believe me, because I've gone through the process before, it's not easy shifting an institution from one locality to another locality. It's not easy. The concern of the panel, and a legitimate concern, was I think it didn't see the Grading Council as critical to the core mandate of SA Tourism. On examination with the board and others, my finding was certainly that it is not disturbing or detracting from the work of SA Tourism either. And in fact, SA Tourism views it as complementary to its work. So it's an institutional home. The appointment of the Chief Assurance Officer, well, although the panel recommended that it be held in abeyance, you know, held in abeyance for how long? And that was the interaction with the Grading Council and with the SA Tourism Board. To say, well, at that point, I must say, at that point, I thought that the panel recommendations had merit of relocating it. But that relocation would take a long time. I've subsequently been persuaded, and I'm sharing this quite honestly with the Board, that the time and effort in relocating is simply something that we can do without right now, and that there are good synergies within SA Tourism. I'm just sharing the thought processes with you. What we will get from the grading council, because you raised very pertinent points about the grading system and the legislation governing the grading system, I think the chairperson raised. Before we start looking at the legislation specifically, what we would like, and I'm sure all of you would appreciate that, is a more comprehensive policy concept to say why is, you know, and we asked the grading council to start preparing that. Why is grading important in more detail? How do we retain the integrity of the grading system? How is it impacted on by new developments such as TripAdvisor and others? Should it be subsidized by the state? Should it be part subsidized by the state, or should it be free? And you mentioned some of the points that the Grading Council made themselves, and you want to get me to express my own views, which I partly will, but I'd also like to, I don't want to create policy on the hoof. I think we should look at this very, very carefully, but I think there certainly is a strong case for having full-time assessors there who are paid for and fully paid for, and we need to have well-trained assessors, all of that the Grading Council is fully aware of. And it is not easy to train an assessor. Sounds like an easy thing to do, it is not. Because unless you have a really good assessor, an assessor should also play an advisory role, by the way. And there we agree with the Grading Council. The assessor should be almost a chairperson, almost like, let's say, a new entrant, new small businesses that come into tourism. They don't necessarily know what they need to do in order to be graded. But certainly there must be value in being graded, real value, whether it's free or not free. Why should people bother? Because they still have to comply. And so the basket of benefits is very important. The integrity of the system is very important. And it needs to complement things like TripAdvisor. So it's fine. You're going to go to TripAdvisor and it's going to say a few nice things, and maybe you've had, you know, 20 hits there. And everybody stayed at your place, said something nice. By the way, I know of some places that get people to say something nice about their place as well. I would do that if I were a place owner. So, you know, it can't be the only thing that you rely on. So I see TripAdvisor, and I certainly don't. I see TripAdvisor, and I still go into the website of the place, and I want to know that the place is graded. Dear honourable members here, and dear government here, we should be more insistent that government should use graded establishments. And that becomes part of the motivation to get yourself graded. So when you go on your oversight trip, don't even dream of staying at the place that is not graded, you know. We'll get you. But I do think that there should be real value. So when you are a three-star place, it must be known these are the minimums. And it should be non-negotiable, and it should be reliable. And I fully get those points made here. But let me say that the challenge has been thrown at them to prepare a draft policy framework. And then we will engage with that draft policy framework. And I say, honourable members, that the current Tourism Act has anomalies in it. It says the minister must appoint a grading council. Minister must. And so we will have to, and then what we must then is that the minister may assign that responsibility to SA Tourism. And there's a contradiction there. You can't say there has to be a grading council. As soon as you say that, it becomes a creature of law. Sorry? Exactly. And then a council has to exist, and a council has to account as a council. And then you say, but I'll assign all or some of these responsibilities to another entity. So we need to re-examine that. But first, let's look at what we want. I know I'm going into too much detail, but how expansive do you want the grading system to be as well? How far across the value chain do you want to be? So let's give them a couple of months to prepare something that we can engage with. Jobs for foreigners. I mean, I don't think we need to necessarily beat about the bush. You can go to just about any restaurant in Cape Town and you'll find a non-South African working in that restaurant. That's a reality. But it's also a reality that non-South Africans are working as domestic workers throughout South Africa. Lots. Non-South Africans are working as gardeners, throughout South Africa a lot. Domestic workers are helping you, non-South Africans are helping you park your car when you go out. Non-South Africans are working on farms, seasonal workers and full-time workers on farms. So it's a much bigger challenge than just affecting the industry. And I don't think we can deal with that. It's about migration policy. It's about who has the right to work in South Africa, who doesn't. And that is honestly not our domain. What we do want, though, Honourable Chairperson, what we do want is to, in our program as we go on, as we go forward, and we hope that we get solid support from you, is to invest more money in training and skills development of South Africans, that we have more skilled South Africans that can occupy different positions in the value chain, more skilled bartenders, more skilled front office workers, more skilled waiters and waitresses, and managers, and chefs, and sommeliers. So some of our programs are there. They are very useful. We get good feedback from the industry, but they're a little bit, to be honest, a little bit fragmented. And as we reorganize our own department, we are going to ensure that our own department has more dedicated attention to skills development and training. The fund for the South African National Convention Bureau, and I think at the moment it's part of the budget. I think the recommendations are, how can we get a model for the Convention Bureau, because who benefits from a big conference happening in a town or in a city? Local hotels, local product owners benefit from it. And to start looking at how can we, get some kind of contribution beyond the state paying for it. But the fact of the matter is that's where we say that is a bit further down the line. At the moment, the work of the Convention Bureau and the support it gives for South Africa hosting conferences, the return on investment is so high. I mean, some conferences will happen in South Africa, of course, with or without support of the Convention Bureau. But the Convention Bureau is offering a critically important service in getting some of these conferences here. Can I get the details? You just want to speak a little bit about the Convention Bureau, if you don't mind, because I probably not answered that question adequately.
Thank you, Mr. The subvention fund is absolutely necessary for the Convention Bureau to be able to competitively bid against other countries that have got competitive subvention funds already. The purpose is that when you have a large association that is probably bringing here 1,000 and beyond, the key issue is that there are certain benefits that they will consider to be lightening the burden for them to actually come here in terms of the ex-co of such an association. So you need to make sure that they've got some of these things well handled and so on, some of their transportation, further programs and so on and so forth. But in the end, the benefits that you get out of that far outweigh whatever amount of money you would have actually put in terms of securing that particular bid. And it's all about the most important thing, the rules around the use of the fund. We've done some research around this to look at how those work and so on. And we have already started some engagements as well with National Treasury in terms of how best can we actually establish this particular fund.
Gigi, and lastly, before we move on to the next presentation, Chairperson, is your important question about infrastructure and what you refer to as sea tourism, coastal tourism, whatever one would like to call it. I think the two things here, I have had discussion with Minister Patel, because infrastructure is not our responsibility, but the infrastructure surrounding our areas that have good tourism potential is critically important, or areas that are already tourism destinations. So road access to Pilanesberg, boat access to the White Coast, and other forms of infrastructure critically important. So I think we are quite open to the idea, more than open, would encourage it, that it finds its way in some way or other, still be defined as one of maybe one of the SIPs, but certainly finds its way into the PICD. So we can say, well, what kind of infrastructure
do we want, do we, and what kind of coherent approach can we adopt? You know, tourism, obviously one of the key differences between tourism and let's say energy and ICT, energy you're talking about, you know, having a new power plant and grid that functions. Tourism is everywhere. There's a little bit of tourism in every village in the country. And so, you know, you've got to make some key decisions about, you know, are you going to invest in infrastructure? You do not have to invest more in infrastructure in Cape Town to stimulate tourism. But to stimulate tourism in other parts of the country, you may indeed need to invest in infrastructure. That does not mean that we don't want to do things to enhance places like Table Mountain and places in like Mahuneng in Johannesburg that we see as destinations that are developing, destinations that are quite important to us, including Vilakazi Street in Toronto or other destinations. But the untapped destinations that are critically reliant on infrastructure is where the big investment we have to take place. On the sea tourism, let me just say that at a late stage we've become involved in the ocean economy, Pakistan, the focus on an ocean economy, because tourism, on coastal tourism, is obviously very important. But for the moment, it's already there, but there are clearly undeveloped areas on the coast that would really benefit from investment and a stronger focus, like the Wild Coast, for example. But we are in a partnership. We are in the process of entering into a partnership with the website called WESSA, stands for Wildlife and Environment. Thank you. Thanks, comrade. and what is it about? It's about for the moment, with a strong focus on retaining our blue flag status of our beaches. That doesn't mean that we don't want to do other things to stimulate the potential of our coastline in tourism, but this is an early starting point. May I just say that we see this as a starting point in an expanded program of focusing in a more classical EPWP approach, focusing on critical areas to keep them clean and safe and to provide tourism-related services. So we would see this as the beginning of us moving into a working for tourism kind of concept, as we have working for water and other programs that would employ people, that will make a real difference, because we have critical areas, whether it's a hiking trail in Sitikama or a hiking trail here on Table Mountain, to have employed people there, branded, to say that we are here to give you information, we are here to help keep the area safe, and we are here to keep the area clean and to be a friendly face, if you like. And of course, those people would ask you, they can't guarantee the safety of a beach, they have to be linked to local police stations. But that's the concept that we're developing, and our starting point will be with Westside. I think the chairperson, I hope I've covered all of the points and questions. Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much. You almost built Rome in a day. But I think as a committee, we are happy that this review happens in our time. So we know it from the beginning. And we'll also monitor the progress. And now, Minister, can you talk on the more spoken about visa regulations, how people's lives are going to be made better? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the presentation has been circulated. Just to pick up back a little bit by way of background, obviously no honourable members here, that with the introduction of the immigration regulations in May, with the collection of the immigration regulations in May, and I should emphasise good intention on the side of the Department of Home Affairs to combat child trafficking and to safeguard our country security interests. And there are clearly international threats, and you have to make sure that you have the necessary measures in place that protect your country against potential threats. And we, as the department, and myself as minister, and I'm sure the portfolio committee itself,
would certainly support measures to combat child trafficking, and the whole industry has said that it didn't. That's given. But what happened was that in the measures that were introduced, there were certainly consequences. There were certainly consequences because of the requirements of the particular measures. And in essence, I mean, there were two major measures that impacted on tourism, and that was the insistence that travelers to South Africa would have to carry with them, if the minors traveling to South Africa, which would have to have a, what we call an unabridged birth certificate, or if traveling with just a single parent or guardian, or on their own, a host of accompanying documents, without going into the details. In reality, it meant that from countries needing visas to travel to South Africa, they didn't necessarily have to travel with these documents, but they needed to produce these documents when applying for a visa. The real problem arose with the, what we call the visa-exempt countries, which are our biggest overseas markets, USA, UK, Germany, and many other countries, where because they do not need a visa, so they travel to South Africa without a visa, they had to physically travel with these documents. And the airlines, because they couldn't really, they couldn't risk the possibility that people arrive in South Africa, only then to discover that there's one document missing, and then they would not be allowed entry. Airlines were checking on these documentation before people even depart, which airlines don't anywhere in the world have to do. Airlines only normally check your ticket as you check in. You know, if you travel abroad, some of you, most of you, all of you, they check your ticket, they check your passport, they check your visa, if you need a visa. That's all they check. But in this case, they had to check a bundle of documents. I could go on and on and on about the difficulties that posed. But the good news is that we had thorough engagement with the Department of Home Affairs and other affected departments, ministries. The President announced a long time ago, as in his State of the Nation address, that it will be reviewed. The review ensued. The President appointed the Deputy President to convene this Interministerial Committee. The Interministerial Committee did really thorough work looking at the reason for these measures and the consequences of these measures. And an announcement was made just about 3 weeks ago, I think. An announcement was made on the Cabinet position. Because the Interministerial Committee then presented its findings and recommendations to Cabinet, and Cabinet approved the following, and that's where we get to the presentation. But the some of these measures are more important to tourism than others, but starting off with countries where no South African visas exist, that the Home Affairs will, in those cases, accept applications sent by post. Because the way it stood currently was that if you live in a country without a mission, you would have to physically go to the neighboring country where there is a mission to apply for your visa. So now they have kept applications by post, and when we are ready to do the biometric capture will be done on arrival at port of entry. With respect to, again, these are all the short-term measures, with respect to countries that require visas to come to South Africa, the agreement is that they will no longer have to go, as soon as the necessary measures are put in place, of course, that an accredited tourism company or a travel agent would be able to lodge the application on behalf of the traveler, on behalf of the applicant, or on behalf of their client. So in China, Russia, and India, and that will be the initial focus. And as you see here on the report, with possible extension to other visa-requiring countries. But starting off with those critically important markets for us, South Africa, that people no longer have to go in person to go apply for a visa. They'll be able to log through the accredited tourism agency. The challenge right now, and the work that is being done right now, is to get that list of accredited tourism agencies approved for these three countries, and it will go on to other countries later. The Department of Home Affairs will continue issuing long-term multiple entry visas to frequent travelers, and various announcements have been made, and measures are being worked on to allow for what is called executive business people, but I think that is a matter that is being worked on between the Department of Home Affairs and Trade and Industry, who qualifies for long-term multiple entry visas, but that is being worked on. The slightly longer term, medium term if you like, on your that page, we will be, the Department of Home Affairs will increase visa facilitation centers in the listed countries. I should explain it because often it creates confusion. If a person no longer has, this is the question that often arises, if a person no longer has to apply in person, then why would you want more visa facilitation centers? Home Affairs has made that very clear. This is not for leisure tourism. This is for work permits, for student permits, other forms of visas. And so that's why they're having more visa facilitation centers, including in those countries that do not need visas. Next page. The longer term measures, and these are all related to the in-person application we'll get to the car travel in a moment. The Department of Home Affairs will install systems for pre-flight checks at international airports, will upgrade the advanced passenger processing system, will implement the passenger name record, and will finalize the automation of visa and permitting system. So those are all measures that the DHA will start doing to modernize its system and to make its system more operationally effective with respect to the issuing of visas and the processing, if you like. On the child travel requirements, the IMC agreed that the child travel requirements for our own children, and that is South African children traveling abroad, that the current requirements will remain. That is not of critical importance to us as the tourism ministry. We are concerned about removing obstacles to people coming to South Africa. So, our Department of Social Development are critical players when we look at requirements for South African children. But the decision is South African children or South African minors traveling abroad will still need the relevant child travel documentation. The next page. I don't see it here, but I think if I can just share, the decision is a lot of confusion around the term unabridged birth certificate, and the preferred term from the Department of Home Affairs is a birth certificate with parental information, I believe. Going on to the child travel requirements, it starts off with foreign children. Where visas are required, we say continue with that, and we've agreed that will be continued with, but that is in the normal visa application process. So I may explain. This is for visa requiring countries. If you want to travel to the UK from South Africa, you will also be required, and you want to travel with a minor, you will also be required in your visa application to bring documentation with you when you apply for a visa. So we're saying for visa requiring countries, yes, you can bring the documentation with you, you should bring the documentation with you as you apply for a visa. But if you're in a country, and there lays a big problem, if you are in a country that is visa exempt, you will no longer be required to travel with these documents as travel documents. You will be strongly advised to carry documents with you that can prove the relationship between yourself and the adult that you're traveling with, or that will show consent from a parent or a guardian in the event that there's any suspicion upon arrival. So that is exactly what the USA does, exactly what the UK does, exactly what Canada does, and so we would just make ourselves quite in line with international practice. On a child's travel requirements and the further measure that's announced is that the school principals will issue letters. This is for South African children. Of course, this will not apply to the countries that will no longer need to carry this documentation with them, but school principals could issue letters confirming that they have permission for children to travel. This is for group travelers. It could be included to sports bodies, a soccer team coming, traveling out of South Africa. Currently, there is provision for schools coming to South Africa, for some countries, for the principal to authorize and to assure that those children have the consent of their parents. But clearly, when such such documents are no longer required, this will fall away. The parental consent affidavit, again, it's for children traveling outside South Africa, will be extended to a period of 6 months. At the moment, 3 months. This will apply to the documentation required for visa requiring countries as well. Okay, then you've got just on the next page what I've already said about the other bridge birth certificates, stating to the birth certificate containing parental details. These details will in future be printed in your South African passport. In general, some general points, the Department of Home Affairs will also consider, and I think this is very important, the introduction of visas on arrival for nationals of visa requiring countries. I know these get very confusing sometimes. The whole valid visa for the UK, USA, or Canada. Let me explain this. At the moment, if you are travelling just from India, China, Russia, any country that requires a visa, we said, of course, you have to apply for a visa. What is being considered here is that if you are from that country and you already have a visa that enables you to travel the listed countries to the listed countries, that will be sufficient. And that will then you can simply get your visa on arrival. And that would be an important advance, but that is still being looked at. What is critically important here under the general is that the Department of Home Affairs is now responsible for what is called here the facilitating the legal instrument, but to put it into more comprehensive language, in order to put effect or to give effect to these decisions, the current legislative framework, which includes the immigration regulations, the immigration regulations will have to be appropriately amended to allow this to take effect. In terms of the decision that from a visa requiring country that you will be able to lodge your visa application through an accredited travel agent or tour operator, we are working very hard at putting lists together and submitting them to the Department of Home Affairs. If I'm not mistaken, DC, the list of travel agents for China has already been submitted to the Department of Home Affairs. So, dear colleagues, that's where we are at the moment, and I'm really, we are open to any questions. What is very important is that, firstly, we believe that this is a really positive advance. A, B, it needs to be properly understood, and C, it needs to be implemented. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. Thank you, Minister. Honourable members, you can comment, ask questions, and so forth. But Minister, I hope this will be communicated and be communicated, including, where applicable, using some other languages for people that want to travel who use other languages other than English. Thank you. Honourable members.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very pleased that the Minister has finally come around and agreed that in fact these regulations are hurting our tourism brand and also our tourism ranking globally. It's been an eventful year, and there's been many utterances made by the Minister initially supporting the regulations and saying that we should just hang in there, and then eventually the Minister coming out to say that it is indeed not good for tourism. But let bygones be bygones. I think the Minister has explained his position today that in fact we need to now find a way to use these regulations to reposition ourselves. Now in any instances I would refer to these regulations as a band-aid, because it's very unfortunate that the President, in the State of the Nation address, announce their review, and only many months later did the president announce the establishment of the Interministerial Committee. So there's been a lot of time waste in between, and I think, you know, specifically in tourism, which is a creative industry, they should not be suffocated by excessive government regulation. You do not have the luxury of time, because many marketing agencies and people deciding to travel do their bookings in advance. So when you have regulations that are making it difficult, people will simply just choose a different destination. And so now the real work begins for the department and for the industry, because now we need to obviously explain these regulations, and that costs money and it costs time. Something that, again, impacts negatively in terms of budgeting forward, because you would like to use the money that you have in your budgets to build your brand, and we've discussed it earlier on in terms of the SAT's mandate. And now that these regulations have already caused some damage, now we have to channel funding into fixing our brand and explaining these regulations. So it's just a very sorry state of affairs, for lack of better words, because it could have been prevented. And what makes it worse is that the Department of Home Affairs, and I want to say it to the record, used incorrect information. Let's not beat around the bush. I attended their portfolio committee meeting, and the Director General emphasized and overemphasized the fact that more than 30,000 children are being backed across our borders, and therefore these regulations are very important to prevent that from happening. Whilst in fact, it was only a fraction of that number, confirmed by the SAPS and various other agencies. I cannot remember the figure, but it's a double-digit figure. While again, the point is, it's a double-digit figure to me. So there's no argument in that. But nonetheless, but then it comes down to the big question, why did we not subject these regulations to economic and regulatory impact assessments prior to implementation? That's the key question. And in fact, the President announced in a presidential circular that when far-reaching regulations are announced or about to be implemented, let's subject such regulations to regulatory and economic impact assessments. That did not happen. The Minister of Home Affairs then instituted a wishy-washy review to look at the unintended consequences. That was also a few months ago, and again excluded tourism operators and associations from that review. Another big mistake, because they could have, in that meeting, provided some sensible solutions going forward. So just a lot of mistakes down the line. But now we have a situation where hotel occupancy rates are down, airline ticket sales are down, international arrivals are down, so now we need to work double as hard to make sure that we repair our brand. So what I would like to know from the Minister is what steps and plans are in place by the Department of Tourism to use our SAT offices abroad, and also the workings of the ambassadors and the foreign missions to go out and explain to the international tour operators and marketing agents that these regulations have now been amended, and now you can again shift your marketing and all of your other programs to include South Africa as a destination. Because I know for a fact that one of the biggest Chinese operators walk through Africa tours. They stopped all their marketing, but not only them, and I don't want to single out one agency here, but there are many. They stopped their marketing, Minister. So we seriously have to go out on a stakeholder engagement. I've done so already, because I'm part of Parliament. I'm outside of Parliament, so I must help build South Africa and help build our brand. So I've gone and I've explained to some of these hotel groups and marketing agents what the realities are and how to go about it, so that we can help build our brand together. And I would like to know from your department, because we cannot only allow the Department of Home Affairs, but I think really the tourism department needs to step up and get into that space. But here's a couple of questions, Madam Chair, and hopefully indulge me, because I'd like to just get absolute clarity from you. Now, with respect to the manual vetting of the unabridged birth certificates and passports, what plans are in place to increase the turnaround size in this process? With regards to the introduction of the accredited tourism company program for China, India and Russia, how is this concession tackling the problem of potential tourists being deterred by having to apply for visas in person? Because then also the question arises that there are many people making use of the technologies that exist that will not only go through a tour operator, specifically in this case if they are accredited, but to make their own bookings. So what system is in place for them? Because then they will have to make use of the sale mail process, but by post, which I think is absolutely ludicrous, because they have all the technologies, and to expect someone to apply by post is sale mail, and it comes down to more red tape. In fact, we should be rolling out the red carpet for tourists and not putting red tape in their place. And then with regards to the building of visa facilitation centers in China, India, United Kingdom, Nigeria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Angola, Ghana, Kenya, and Uganda, how do the ministers in the IMC plan to achieve their set targets of building these in 1 year without exerting more pressure on the taxpayer in order to obtain more funding? Because you need to go look in the infrastructure and all of these things are just, again, a lot of resources will have to go into doing this. So the bottom line is electronic visas. That is absolutely the solution. We've researched this extensively. I personally went to see Minister Bigaba and you, Minister, on a form to explain to the benefits of online visas. So if you look at all of these recommendations and all of the things that will be put in place from now over a period of 1 year, it's just, I would have imagined that was one of the considerations going forward, that the department would be as bold as to say, let's explore the benefits of electronic visas. It's safe, it cuts turnaround time, it's secure, and it's actually increased tourism in the countries where it's been implemented. Turkey and many other countries have implemented online visas, and it works very, very well. And then it will also deal with the issue of guaranteeing safety. So that's ultimately what we also need to do. And therefore, as I said earlier on, any child traffic because our borders, and vice versa, is one too many. So we have to make sure that we safeguard our country's borders and our country's integrity, but not at the cost of tourism, because we know that one job is created for every 12 tourists visiting our country. So there's a lot of revenue loss. I think it's estimated 7.5 million rand. So it's revenue from the private sector, who ultimately are the people creating jobs, but at the same time it's revenue out of government's coffers. And that's the thing that actually irks me the most, is that, and therefore I've written to the Minister of Finance on this matter, because I think the Minister of Finance would agree that, you know, any regulation or any measure that impacts on the revenue income to the government is much new money that we technically need to build schools, clinics, etc., etc. So therefore there's a huge loss of opportunity in that regard, but enough said. I think Madam Chair touched on most of the things that I want the Minister to answer, and also the other issues that I wanted to place on record. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. You almost always come for everybody.
Thank you, Secretary. What I want to do is to appreciate the intervention by the Head of State. One, of first making this intervention. Two, of establishing this interministerial committee. Three, of his cabinet looking into the recommendations of the committee. What I understand, Chair, is that the issue of these visa regulations is not solely our responsibility. It's the responsibility of the Department of Home Affairs. We are just beneficiaries of these recommendations editorially. What I just recommend is that the Minister must keep on sitting in that committee, protecting our interests as the committee, and tourism fraternity, but not at the expense of the security of our country and our children. What I like most, Chair, is what is said on slide 9, that Cabinet has extended the life of the committee to deal with anything that may arise while implementing the Cabinet decision. That I like most. Otherwise, we welcome the recommendations. I would also recommend that we be updated of the program. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. But in our recommendation for the principal R, we actually had recommended that the Minister to have a study conducted on the impact of and intended on the impact of the visa immigration and unintended consequences. And I hope as far as communication is concerned, various strategies will be used to make this very accessible to everybody, as I mentioned immediately. And what relevant details are there with regard to accredited tourism company program? And then finally, Minister, you might not have discussed this one, but there are so many people that get in outside the border post. I mean outside the usual ports where they must be getting in or out. But maybe this is more for DHA to look into what is it that is going to be done about people that just go over the country to Botswana to do business and to facilitate travel. That might be more for Home Affairs, really. And we would like to get some ideas around those issues. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. As the opening shot here was about something about tripping under the bridge. But just for the record, I mean, I think these regulations, I don't have any evidence of me ever having said I think these regulations are good. What I tried very hard to do was to understand the rationale behind the regulations, what they were intended to do, and certainly understand more comprehensively the impact and the effect of the regulations. What became clear to me, certainly at a very early stage, is that the regulations, with all good intention, were having a negative impact. I should have said I support these regulations. But what you have on trying to find Chairperson, and it's not unique to South Africa, you have competing mandates in government, not in the sense that we're competing with each other, but the fulfillment, the fulfilling one mandate could run counter to the fulfilling of another mandate. And so something can be done in one area with all good intent, but the effect of it could be negative on another mandate. And that is not unique to South Africa. I've now met many ministers of tourism all over the world, and there are many countries where there's a healthy, robust engagement between ministers of the interiors, they're often called the ministers of home affairs, and the minister of tourism. Because the minister of tourism invariably wants to lessen the burden and wants to, you know, ease of access and facilitate access. The minister of tourism could be highly irresponsible in that as well, to say, hey man, just do away with all visas. The Minister of Home Affairs might be inclined in all countries to overdo the other end and to say, hey, my job is to make sure that people who we don't want in our country don't come to our country. My job is to make sure that we get all the information. So it's not unique to South Africa that there be some discussion between ministers with possibly competing mandates or conflicting mandates. The time waste, let me not be apologetic about it, to say, we would have liked to have seen this matter concluded earlier. It took months, but it came to conclusion. And that's the most important thing, and a good conclusion as far as we are concerned. And the Honourable Post is right, this is where our real work begins. Water out of the bridge to re-coach. It happened, now we have to start building up. We're not disputing the fact that it had a real negative impact on tourism numbers. It did. And so that is an answer to another question about the chairperson, your question, the study of the impact. The department is in fact beginning to do a more systematic and comprehensive study of the impact. But in fact, events that we took, fortunately, we had enough evidence to show that it was having a negative impact. We didn't need to probe in more detail. So the question was not how bad is the impact, it's enough evidence to show that it was having a substantially negative impact. It's difficult to
treat this as an exact science and to say, do we know exactly what impact it has, because there are different factors that play all the time. But let me leave it that. The manual vetting of the unreached birth certificates, well, there's no more requirement for an unabridged birth certificate from countries and don't require visas to come to South Africa. So there's no manual vetting of a birth certificate for those countries. You are right there, person, you need to must communicate and communicate and communicate, and in different languages, including international different languages. We must communicate to our Italian marketing Italian. And we must make direct contact with our operators. And I'm glad to hear that the honourable member has already taken upon himself to communicate so that people know that, hey, this big obstacle has, you know, we've made some critical decisions and we're in the process of removing this big obstacle. I say in the process, because it is only removed, that's why I said with my ADD, it's only removed once we put the necessary measures in effect. And I'll get back to that in a moment. But we've got to communicate now that this is a critical decision and this is what we're doing currently to put it into effect. And the communication will be ongoing. And yes, dear person, an honorable member, we will be updating progress constantly. As soon as we've got an agreement, of course, as soon as we have an agreement on the accredited tourism companies in China, say these are the tourism companies, that has to be communicated pronto, immediately. To say, okay, now we are ready to do business in China without going in person. And then as we get that information from other countries, we communicate that immediately. The regulations will have to be amended in order to put into effect this condition, this agreement, that from visa exempt countries you no longer have to carry that documentation. At the moment, the regulations, in other words, the law requires it. So the law has to be changed. Just the regulations that won't be a bill, an amendment bill that will actually come to Parliament. We don't believe, our honourable members, that it's that difficult. And it shouldn't take so much, it shouldn't take that long. And so we will certainly be working very closely with the Department of Home Affairs to ensure that it is done as speedily as possible. The continuation of the INC, we also in tourism we welcome that, because it's about implementation. It's about monitoring. It's about monitoring what more needs to be done and can be done. And the nice thing, honourable folks, about having an INC of this, in some countries, this INC was officially created INC because of the particular problem. In some countries, there are interministerial committees chaired by the Minister of Tourism because so many other departments, there have been interface with so many other departments. But we welcome it, that it's not just dealing with the problem that was in front of us at the time, that even as new problems arise, that the Interministerial Committee can meet and say, how do we get this problem? That the Interministerial Committee can meet and discuss some of the proposals put in front of us, like e-visas, for example. Postal applications, Australia does it. Australia does it. They have e-visas and postal applications and in-person applications. And other countries do it as well. So, you know, some countries have a hard requirement of in-person application. We know it. Try going to the UK by post and applying to visa by post. You won't get it. You have to go there in-person. You have to go there in-person from many countries. Us, South Africans, apply for a visa. So we are saying for visa-requiring countries, we don't want that. We want your business, China. We want your business, India. And we're going to make it easier. We're going to make it easier by saying you won't have to go in person. You can do it through the travel agents. The challenge is, though, to get those accredited travel agents as quickly as possible. That's the challenge. But just look at better systems, agreed. To look at models like the Turkish model and other countries that have e-visas, most countries have some kind of, that do have e-visas, have some, what's the word for it, combination of measures. They're not exclusively e-visas. But nonetheless, I mean, any information that we get that will help us and start moving in the direction of things of a system that is even better, great, we welcome that. The visa facilitation centers, as I've said, in the UK and in other countries, there are not visa facilitation centers for purposes of certain visas to come to South Africa. So that is really a matter that the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs should deal with Home Affairs. Of the difficulties of establishing these visa facilitation centers, we want tourists who want to come to South Africa to come here with greater ease. So visa facilitation centers, in the event that we don't need a visa, for purposes of tourism travel to South Africa, it's not an issue for us. Visa facilitation in center in countries that will now be able to do, to fly through accredited travel agencies, not the big issue, because you can do it different, you'll be able to do it differently. I thought that was clear, that's why the visa facilitation centers being established even in Zimbabwe, because they're not for the regular leisure tourists coming from Zimbabwe or the tourists coming here for less than 3 months. So, but the Department of Home Affairs can give you more information than that, including information shared person on entry from outside of the official ports of entry. It's not something that you can comment on. We do have a challenge with porous borders in South Africa, but it's not a challenge that we need to address. Trying to think if there were any. The honourable member who asked the most questions here was honourable member Force, and I'm hoping that he said what plans are relating to country officers' mission. First step is obviously to get those country officers to have a clear, succinct message that it puts out and says this is the situation, and messages that change throughout as more information comes in to communicate it very rapidly. So that, and then the missions, of course, because we don't have country officers. You have to get clear messages to each of our missions to say, this is the situation, this is the cabinet decision. As the cabinet decision becomes implemented, to update them with new information all of the time. Yes, honourable members, we have to regain lost ground. And that relates to our earlier discussion. We must market more aggressively, we must market more creatively, we have to improve our destination. We've got to tell the world out there, we have to regain the confidence of the world out there that we want you to visit South Africa. And we are going to try and make it, without compromising on our security interests, we're going to try and make it as easy as possible for you to come to South Africa without compromising on the security interests. And that's where we are at the moment. I mean, good news. Dear colleagues, good news, July figures were, if you saw the SA Tourism, July figures were, for a long time we have seen downward trend, July 2015 versus July 2014, slight upward trend, UK 17% up on July 2014. But you know, this is just months, you know, comparing 2015 month by month. What we want now is to get back to upward trend. And we're going to have to put in a lot of work to ensure that we get back onto the upward trajectory that we were on before. Thank you.
Minister and your team, thank you very much for all this information which we really needed, both for African Tourism Review and the work of the IMC. We thank you very much. And the excuse, you are excused. So that the committee will just be touching on a few aspects.
Thank
you very much. Thank you. Honourable members, there is the report of the visit to Ethiopia. It has been approved by the chapter of the chair. So just go and register that you see at your feet. The doctor should talk to the doctor.
Other than this, it's not going to...